Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
It is Friday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. And before we dive into anything, we're going to have some news to go over here. And maybe you already know what's coming if you listened to the Border Patrol earlier today, or since Wednesday, it would have been. But today is the last day at the station for Marco. A 2-year run here on The Shift for him as the board operator. Marco is the only board operator, that I've had on this show. Going back to August of 2021, I believe it would have been. Marco's been the board op since then, and he has been the board op mostly every single day, even when he took over at the Border Patrol and handling everything behind the scenes. This show does not exist without Marco Marquez. Marco taught me how to run all the production boards here. So it's a bittersweet day here at the station because a very good friend, a very good coworker, and Marco will be leaving. But he's got great things on the horizon. So, Marco, I just want to turn it over to you for however long you want to talk to. I'm sure you've had to do this like 3 or 4 times already on the Border Patrol. But whatever you want to say here to open up the show and to close the show today, give you that opportunity to do so. Not that you need my authority. It's your show just as much as it's mine. But mic is on. Mic is yours. Floor is yours for this final day at the station for you.
Thanks, Jack. Got to say a couple of words before going off the air on the Border Patrol this morning. Caught me off guard a little bit when Steven threw it over to me to close it out. But one thing I didn't get the chance to do was to thank everyone that's helped me get into radio and help give me the opportunities to get to where I'm at today. And so it all starts back at KJHK 90.7 in Lawrence on the Hill. I owe so much to the University of Kansas for what opportunities they have for their students and what they fund over there. And that includes that radio station, getting to call KU basketball games, football games, host studio shows, talk shows. And then of course, that leading to an internship at 580 WIVW, where I worked under the sports talk show there with Jake LeBond, Dan Lucero, and Brendan Dorzinski, who are all still out there to this day, hiring me onto his part-time role from there. And then, the internship here after my freshman year there with Steven, Jake, and Nate, staying in touch with those guys helped immensely, as that got my foot into the building here. And then got to meet the Drake, Jason Justice, who's in charge of hiring the board ops around the station, and him getting to talk with him after Steven introduced us to each other, and it led to him asking if I wanted to work some weekends here, starting out on this board right here, funny enough, I'm doing my last show on. So crazy full circle moment right now, and just doesn't feel real when you've been doing radio for, you know, it's been a short time, but it's felt like a long time, 7 years. And so to be back in the same room where I started, and it's a crazy moment. Life brings those into our lives. And so to Jason, and then of course Chad Boger for hiring me on, of course, and trusting me to take over the morning show as well, from having to do weekend stuff, and of course Wichita shows when they started up 92.3 Wichita, which, like, what is it, it's third year now?
Second year? It's going on third year. I couldn't be working over there if it wasn't for you.
You earned it, man. You earned it, and you were willing to learn that crazy system that it is over there, having to work aboard in Overland Park while broadcasters sit in Wichita, to give a little peek behind the curtain. But, man, it's been crazy having to do the Shane Dennis show there, the start of it, and Pat Strothman's show. Glad to see that they're still going over there and that there's things building onto it. It's not where it was when we first started that thing back in July of 2020. Mm-hmm. And so, the opportunities just allow me to grow to where I'm at now, and just very, very appreciative of it and everyone's trust that they put into me. It's something I don't take for granted, and I just hope that at the end of the day, I did a job that I hope I did the job well, and hope I did the station some good, and it's all I can ask for. And of course, Kansas City, it's always an honor to be able to work in the city that you grew up in, especially in this type of industry. Mm-hmm. Get to talk about the teams you've watched your whole life, and it's awesome to think back where it's like conversations that you would have in the car, talking about the Chiefs, the Royals, Missouri, K-State, KU, going from just being in the car to having a seat at the table and being a part of the airwaves that spread out throughout the throughout Kansas City and Missouri, and so Kansas City and Missouri, excuse me. So it's crazy. It's insane. It's insane just thinking. And the moment doesn't hit until you get to the last few moments, of course. And so feeling it now for sure. Feeling it a lot more than I have all week. And so, man, let's talk some Chiefs.
Yeah, man, we got
a game Sunday night.
We got stuff to get into today, Marco. And you know, the last thing I'll say on that before I revisit it, of course, the end of the show. For those that don't work in broadcasting or don't, you know, talk on air stuff, like, board operators do a lot. And I think that even the term board operator doesn't do it enough justice. Like, when I did my first show here, it is very comforting to know you can talk to somebody. Because we and Marco, we are sitting maybe 10 feet apart. He's behind a glass window, if you will. But you want to feel comfortable talking to whoever is the board operator. And sometimes, you know, you may have somebody that's not as open to talking. They won't really, you know, jump in the dialogue. Like, that changes an entire dynamic of a show. And Marco, whether it's been here, whether it's been Wichita, whether it's been on 810 with the Border Patrol, he's never shied away from that. And I think it's a really good thing. And that goes to show you the type of worker he is here, the type of person and personality he was here at the radio station, because there won't be another Marco. There won't be another Marco that does what he does, that interacts like he does. And for that, for these last 2 years, I thank you, and I wish you nothing but the best on your future endeavors. But you did say it. You know, we got stuff to get into today. We got, you know, breaking news yesterday from KU football. We got a big game tonight, KU and UConn. And, of course, Sunday night football between the Chiefs and the Packers at Lambeau Field. So we will not have a shortage of stuff to talk about. And just kind of going in order there, we'll probably make this segment real quick so we can jump into some more Chiefs talk. But yesterday, it was the breaking news in Kansas football that Andy Kotelnicki, the team's offensive coordinator, is expected to take the job at Penn State. That was kind of rumored over the last couple of days. And with the way Kansas looked in 2023, I really think it came down to this. It came down to this for the Kansas athletic program, for Travis Goff, for donors, for the NIL opportunities. Like, I think Kansas had to pick. Do you want to move forward with Lance Leipold, or do you want to move forward with Andy Kotelnicki? And the reason is, like, Andy Kotelnicki, I believe, wants to be a head coach one day. And as long as Lance Leipold is at Kansas, that ain't happening. That's just not going to happen. I mean, Lance Leipold is such a cushion right now. Even if they took a step back next year, let's say they go 6-6 next year, like, Lance Leipold's job is not in jeopardy. They're not in jeopardy if he goes 4-8, you know, 3 years from now, just because everybody knows the type of coach that he is. And I think for Andy Kotelnicki, he knew, you know, the best way to put myself in a chance to get a job opportunity, to get a head coaching job, I got to go show that I can do it elsewhere as well. Like, doing it Kansas, that is wildly impressive considering where Kansas was for a decade plus. But also keep in mind, the Big 12 is an offensive-minded league. There's not many good defenses in the Big 12. You go and do it in the Big 10, you shine in the Big 10, I'll guarantee you this, Andy Kotelnicki will not be at Penn State very long. that just feels like the reality to me. So I'm sure, you know, number one, Penn State came and said, we'll make you a very highly paid offensive coordinator. Hell, he may be one of the highest paid offensive coordinators going in the next year, just considering what it would have taken to pull him away from Lance Leipold, who he'd been with for the last 15 years. Actually, I think longer than that. But for Kansas, I do not think this is a, well, now they're going to slip back into irrelevancy. Of course, when you keep Lance Leipold and the majority of that staff, like that is a big-time thing here. It's a culture thing. And KU already promoted two guys to the roles of co-offensive coordinator and co-defensive coordinator. Jim Zabrowski, who was the quarterback's coach, he'll be taking on the co-offensive coordinator role. He may also just take the OC role. Don't know if KU will go with an outside hire to help him kind of ease into that role. And then arguably their best recruiter in Jordan Peterson, he was elevated to the co-defensive coordinator role. So two guys get promotions as Andy Kotelnicki is on his way out to Happy Valley to go be the OC at Penn State. But again, you know, this was always going to happen. You know, it's funny because I think when you look around the Big 12 and coaches that are able to stay, OCs that are able to stay, defensive coordinators that are able to stay, all of those things, you know, all of those things are very important in building a brand, building a culture. But if you're a Kansas fan or you're somebody that follows Kansas athletics, you had to have known when Lance Leipold took over, if they ever turned things around, there were going to be members from their coaching staff that were plucked. And if you're a KU fan going, man, well, how does Kansas State keep Chris Klieman every single year? Keep Colin Klein, Joe Klanderman, all of those guys? Well, let's be very blunt here. Chris Klieman did not inherit a mess. Okay, Bill Snyder had put Kansas State on a pedestal. And even in his final years, when K-State wasn't where they once were, it was not a bad spot to be in. So Chris Klieman, of course, turning K-State into what they are, it's very impressive. They won a Big 12 title. Like, absolutely, probably got some calls. But I think for Kansas, it's just a different situation. They were in such a bad spot that whoever turned them around, there were going to be teams calling. And this is maybe the first of a few. There's going to be guys that maybe hit the transfer portal to go and follow Andy Kotelnicki. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But the reality is, you had to have seen this coming one way or another. Even if a guy was given an extension, I mean, Andy Kotelnicki was given a pay boost last year, it never means they're cemented in that spot. And especially for coordinators here, those guys want to be head coaches one day. And if they're going to get a pay boost and it gets them a step up in the ladder of getting to a head coaching role, well, then more power to them. Best of luck to Andy Kotelnicki. But for Kansas, the good thing is you kept Lance Leipold. I mean, if this was the other way around and Lance Leipold took a job elsewhere and then KU was left with all the assistants, that wouldn't really happen, to be honest. Because just like Lance Leipold did at Buffalo, he would take a lot of his coaches. And then if you're Kansas, you're starting from scratch again. Kansas seems very committed to keeping Lance Leipold around in Lawrence. I don't think he's going anywhere. But Andy Kotelnicki, last year it kind of felt like, yeah, this guy's going to be the first to go. Not being fired, of course, but just getting approached by big schools. And Penn State came out of left field. I didn't think that Penn State would come all the way to Lawrence, Kansas to find their next OC. But everybody knows Kansas is back up on the map. That Kansas is no longer a laughingstock. The reason Kansas didn't have anybody plucked from their staff last year, well, at the end of the day, they were 6-7. I know Lance Leipold was rumored to Wisconsin and Nebraska. Like, those were dream jobs for him. What would that have done to those programs, Wisconsin and Nebraska, if it was, we're going to hire the Kansas coach after a losing season? Like, that would not have sat well with a lot of donors. There's a reason Nebraska went after Matt Rhule, a former NFL coach, right? So all of those things, it just kind of feels like, you know, Kansas made their selection. You know, they could have given a ton of money to Andy Kotelnicki, but they feel very confident in the guys that they are promoting. And both of those guys, I might add, are excellent recruiters. I mean, when you turn Jason Bean into what Jason Bean became and Cole Ballard for two games on the fly, you're not keeping your OC. At the end of the day, though, Andy Kotelnicki is not the sole reason why KU's offense was great. I think it's a system type of offense. Like, I don't think Kansas is going to be completely different next year. You know, this group that is going to be taking over the play calling responsibilities, it's not going to be a night and day difference from Andy Kotelnicki. I mean, Jim Zembrowski is a great mind and is very well respected by a lot of the players on offense. And Jordan Peterson brought in a lot of talent to Kansas. So giving him that promotion, I think that not only sits well with the coaching staff, but with the players as well. But that was the big breaking news of yesterday. Andy Kotelnicki, the offensive coordinator at Kansas, on his way to the Big Ten to be the OC of Penn State. Kansas, in response to that, elevated Jim Zembrowski to offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator, I should say, and Jordan Peterson to co-defensive coordinator. So coaching staff just a little bit different. Maybe go into the bowl game as well. I'm not sure that Andy Kotelnicki is going to be able to coach the bowl game, but if not, we'll get to see Zembrowski in his first chance calling the plays without Andy Kotelnicki. Also, Zembrowski was the offensive coordinator for a small point in time at Wisconsin Whitewater under Lance Leipold, so some history there and probably what led to that promotion. Okay, we're going to take our first break of the show. When we come back, some Chiefs talk previewing Sunday Night Football between Kansas City and Green Bay. That's next on ESPN Kansas City. Back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City, I'm your host Jack Johnson alongside Marco Marquez on his final day at the station. Last show. Although we just discussed it, you're making a guest appearance on the Shane Dennis Show on ESPN Wichita, way, way back where it began. So
I know, right? Farewell tour continues
on. Farewell tour. This is just like in Jeter's farewell tour, Miguel Cabrera this year. Like, I think every single station needs to give you some gift that resembles you.
You know, I'll make sure to take one of those coffees on the way out. One of the
those coffees are great, by the way.
Take one of the Folgers with me as my.
I'm drinking an Alani. And these are really good. I don't know if you've had these before.
No, not at
Man,
all.
Man, a little energy drink, but they're zero sugar. They taste good, though. They taste good. It's my replacement for coffee because a little bit in time back in the summer, I was, like, drinking coffee every single day. But I'm not a black coffee drinker. I'm, like, loaded up with the cream and the sugar. Like, basically, like, whenever I went to Starbucks, I get, like, those loaded up whipped cream chocolate swirl.
Oh, no. Did Shane Dennis get you off of those? He got me off of them.
The coffees?
Dude.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just...
No. The sugary creams and stuff. Oh, you just took off coffee completely.
Yeah, no, I can't, because I just... I couldn't even force myself to drink black coffee. Like, to me, I'm like, with coffee, I would always, like, love the sugary... I mean, who doesn't love sugary drinks? But, you know, to me, it was like, man, this is so bad for me. The amount of sugar and what do they even call them?
Saturated fat.
Yeah, but the what was old?
On Monday, Jake will be able to give you a rundown on why everything in the creamers are bad. Why and why?
I need to hear it because I gotta make sure I stay away. Like these Alani's and Kimades are like all the thing I drink now. Because when I get up, I'm like, if I'm gonna go talk, I need to have some form of energy, man. I can't just wake up and not have anything. It's weird.
Said something about the gums. I don't know if that's something
the
that
gums.
Goes into it or it's your teeth. The ones in,
that's big for
teeth.
Me. No, I got a dentist appointment, I think, like next week or 2 weeks after that.
Lost.
So we'll find out. I knew, too. I was like, if I keep drinking this coffee, man, they're going to tell me I have like 7 cavities or have gingivitis or something like that. And I can't do it anymore. So I just swore it off. I won't even try to like have a sip of it because I'll just keep drinking it for the rest of the week.
Well, at 12 o'clock on ESPN Wichita, Shane can recap you on the lecture that he gave me with the coffee creamers.
There we go.
And that's why I'm just black and sugar now.
There you go. Just get a little bit of sweetness to it. But it is going to be a pretty sweet treat for a weird transition I just did there for the Chiefs and Packers on Sunday Night Football. Though it's not the treat that we were all hoping for like the last 3 to 4 years. Rodgers and Mahomes, Lambeau Field or Arrowhead Stadium, always hoped for it. We may never get it. Certainly not with the Packers. You're not going to get that historic battle at Lambeau Field. You're going to get Jordan Love for the second time in these two's career. Jordan Love made his first NFL start at Arrowhead Stadium. Everybody can remember that. When his mom sat basically in the sky, two rows from the top. Maybe it was the top row, now that I think about it. But Kansas City won that game comfortably. In the other meetings, you had Matt Moore versus Aaron Rodgers. Then when Rodgers went to the Jets, it was Patrick Mahomes and Zach Wilson. But still, I think it's going to be a very entertaining and fun game on Sunday Night Football at Lambeau Field. I've actually been to Lambeau Field. I went to Lambeau Field in November, and it was freezing. Not this year, it was last year. Freezing. I've never experienced cold like Wisconsin. I thought it was cold here. I shut down. My body shut down in the third quarter. I was like, I was bundled up, had the cardboard and everything. I'm like, I can't do this, man. And Lambeau is really cool. Like, that is you can just tell when you walk in how ancient it is. And what's even funnier about Green Bay, not even funny, is just sweet. This is insane when you go there. If you've never been to Green Bay, it basically looks like a 70s town, like a 1970s town, cut out, or to fit the narrative here, frozen in time. Like, it is this little 70s town. Like, all the houses, the models, they look like from the 1970s, and there's a giant football stadium just right in the middle. Now, they've added bar districts, modernized it a little bit more, so it looks like more of an NFL stadium, but that's the cool aspect of it. It's like there's these old bars, these old restaurants, these old houses, giant football stadium in the middle. But what you do get there is this old school, you know, smash mouth traditional football, and that's what Kansas City has ahead of them. Now, am I worried about this matchup? Am I worried about the Chiefs' offense slowing down? Well, we know they're the epitome of inconsistency this year. I mean, they looked great against the Raiders after the first couple drives. Is that going to be the same thing against Green Bay? I'm hesitant a little bit because of the way Green Bay's defense looked against Detroit at Ford Field last week on Thanksgiving. But I don't know. This is a great test. I'm glad, actually, that Green Bay has proved me wrong over the last couple weeks, because if you would have listened to the show a month ago, I mean, I'm talking about Green Bay being one of the worst teams in the NFC. Like, if they didn't beat Chicago, if they didn't squeak by, who was it, New Orleans, when Derek Carr got hurt, like, we're talking about a one-win football team with their lone win coming against Chicago. Since then, though, they've rebounded a little bit. Jordan Love looks more comfortable. Now, they're not going to have Aaron Jones. You know, Christian Watson hasn't taken the leap that we all expected him to, but it's a young group, it's a young core, and they got momentum coming into this game. They really do. And with Kansas City coming to town, you know that Lambeau's going to be rocking. And, you know, the weather is not going to be typical freezing Lambeau weather. Like, I think there's a chance of snow or rain, but it's going to be in the 40s and 50s. So it's not what I experience. Sure as hell not that. Because that was the most disgusting cold I've ever been in my entire life. Like, I had been in negative degree temperatures in Colorado snowboarding. It just didn't compare to this Wisconsin cold. I don't know what it is, but I couldn't even have any skin exposed. It was that cold. And it might have been like 15 degrees.
Got to be you're near some body of water, right?
Yeah, it is. You know what? I think it is a little bit like Chicago, like Soldier Field, like it's right next to the water. So yeah, the wind blowing the water, like it just, oh my goodness.
This is probably non-comparable to the weather that you faced in Green Bay. But whenever I think of like being near body of water wintertime,
yeah,
it takes me back to Jayhawk Drive, walking past Lake.
Potter Lake. I walk there every day to class.
Going past Budig, Strong, and Snow,
mm-hmm,
that part right there on a windy day during this time of year.
Unbearable.
Needles to your face.
It you almost had to thaw out like for 30 minutes in class when you were there. It's the exact same type of cold. Maybe not exact, like just add like double the amount of cold to that. But I guess fortunately for Kansas City, like, I know Patrick Mahomes enjoys the snow games and you enjoy the cold weather. I don't think this is one of those games you want the cold weather. This is one of the games you don't want any wind to be a factor. You want Kansas City to come out hot, punch somebody in the damn mouth. When was the last time Kansas City came out and just punched somebody in the mouth? Like, to me, I'm all right. I really am. I'm all right with a slow start. Slow starts can happen. The Raiders, slow start. You know, but some of their losses this year, now you look at Denver, slow start. It's stereotypical slow start. They've just had games this year, though, where they've maybe had a great opening drive, a great defensive stand, but it's not knocking somebody on the floor, putting them on their ass. The Chiefs have not had a game like that, and I don't know how long. Like Philly, they had a very sound, good first half, but I'm talking like three and out, opening drive score, turnover, another three and out, another score. What the Raiders did to Kansas City, that's what needs to happen on Sunday Night Football. Goes without saying. Of course, every team wants to start hot. But, man, to build off what you did in Vegas and lead off Sunday Night Football with that type of start, I almost think that you can get all the fear back in those teams in the AFC. All that fear starts coming back of, well, here they are. This is the Chiefs team we were expecting. They're not broken. They never were broken. They've just now hit their stride. And that's what I'm just dying to see. Man, do not take a step back. Do not regress after the way you exploded offensively against the Raiders. I have to say exploded because there haven't been many 30-plus point performances. They look great. Now, let me play the devil's advocate here. If they start slow, which is possible, it's Sunday Night Football, it's at Lambeau Field, it's a Packers team that has momentum, it's possible. The good thing about Kansas City now, with having this defense, they can afford the slow start. We saw it firsthand against the Raiders in Vegas. You can fall behind 14-0. You can go 3-and-out, have 1 yard of total offense after three drives. But eventually, Steve Spagnuolo and that defense, they make adjustments. And when they make adjustments, that offense stagnates a little bit. And what's the similarity between the Packers and the Raiders? They do not have an experienced quarterback. Jordan Love is better than Aiden O'Connell, at least maybe a little bit, not by much. But I would say this, that Jordan Love is not at that point in his career where he can adapt to a defensive adjustment. When Spagnuolo makes a defensive adjustment that we saw against the Raiders, hell, that we saw against the Chargers a few weeks back, like really good quarterbacks can overcome that. Like Jalen Hurts, I thought, faced a really good defense in the first half. Then they adjusted to Kansas City's defense, and Kansas City didn't really adjust at the very end. But when Kansas City's defense starts a little bit slow, you know they're going to settle in. Like, the Packers could have an opening drive, maybe you have 10 points in the first two drives. They may not score the rest of the game. Like, that's just a reality here. Because the defense, A, is that damn good, and B, the Packers just don't strike me as a team that can relentlessly attack you for four quarters. There are going to be slow points for that offense. And also keep in mind, the last couple weeks, who have the Chiefs faced and the wide receivers they've faced? And this secondary, I would say, is the strength of this team. Legarius Sneed, Trent McDuffie, hell, the safeties have been phenomenal this year, and Justin Reed and Brian Cook. All the way around the secondary has been a nightmare for opposing quarterbacks. But you look at Kansas City and who they have faced, the receiving core they have faced over the last couple weeks. You go to the Raiders, well, that's Devontae Adams, a true number one. Philadelphia, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Miami, well, that's going to be Tyreek Hill. Denver, I mean, probably comparable-ish to somebody like Green Bay, but I'd give Denver's receiving core the upper hand. Cortland Sutton, we know what he's done. His ability, his footwork, his athleticism, ability to high point the ball. And the Chargers, you faced Keenan Allen. Now, the last time you faced a receiving core similar to Green Bay's was Minnesota. And that was with Justin Jefferson, and he didn't really have an active game. And that's still giving a severe edge to Minnesota. I don't remember the last time the Chiefs faced a wide receiver core that's not mediocre, but just not as star-popping, to make up a word there. Not many stars in Green Bay, and really, with the exception of Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre for two decades, there's not many stars. They had Devontae Adams, yes, Aaron Jones for a while, but for the most part, I mean, Green Bay just doesn't bring in the top-end talent, the star talent. And this team, though they've been better of late, they just don't strike me as a team that's going to overwhelm Kansas City's defense. I mean, A.J. Dillon is the number one running back going into this game. The receiving core, the one that is leading them in touchdowns this year, Jaden Reed. Good young receiver. Do you trust Trent McDuffie or Legarius Sneed to lock him down? I would probably lean toward yes. And that's what's going against Jordan Love and the Packers in this situation. If Kansas City had a Swiss cheese secondary, I think Jordan Love can hang around for a little bit. I really do. But if this Chiefs defense, the best aspect of them is their secondary play. Their ability to have these disguised blitzes. I mean, Trent McDuffie has had a sack in like the last three games. Legarius Sneed didn't even play that well against the Raiders, but in the second half he really did. He made the adjustment. And man, I mean, Chris Jones and George Karlaftis and Charles Omenihu up front, this could be a very long day for Jordan Love. Now, it is prime time, and these games usually end up being pretty close, especially this year for Kansas City on the road. And they may play with their food a little bit. I think the spread is just about right here, though. I really do. I think the spread is just about right for this Packers and Chiefs game. 6 points in favor of Kansas City. Now, I would feel inclined to take Kansas City in the points here, but I could also see this going down like the Jets game way, way back in, what was that, October? Early October? Chiefs get out to a hot start, mess around, play with their food a little bit, allowing Green Bay to come back. But this is your chance. Like, this is a statement type of game. Right? You got Buffalo next week. That, of course, is a big game because you can be the final nail in the coffin on Josh Allen and the Bills' season, pushing them under 500 in December. I just don't see a scenario in which Buffalo bounces back from that. But for Green Bay, you're on prime time. It's the standalone game. Everybody's watching you once again. Green Bay is coming off an impressive win against Detroit. You go in there, keep that place quiet, take care of business. I think everybody's starting to consider you the best team in the AFC again. They're not looking at Baltimore. They're not looking at Miami. They're not looking at Jacksonville and saying those are the teams that are better than the Chiefs. If Kansas City takes care of business, goes to 9-3, winning on Sunday Night Football in Lambeau, I think that would give me confidence that they run the table from here on out. I really do. And that is not just taking the Raiders win 31-17 and trying to extend it of, oh, we're going to see that type of team every single week. It's a weak schedule the rest of the way. It really is. Buffalo, if they give you the type of play that they gave Philly, yeah, I could absolutely see a loss, but I'm playing the odds. I'm playing the odds just like I did last year for Kansas City and Cincinnati. And when the Bengals had won the first three, it's like the odds are going to tell you Kansas City's too good to lose four in a row. Like Buffalo has won the last two regular season meetings at Arrowhead. Do they win three in a row? No, I'm playing the odds here. And the Chiefs win that. Then you have Bailey Zappi and the Patriots. You've got Aiden O'Connell at home against the Raiders. House of horrors for the Raiders, really, against Arrowhead with a full-capacity crowd. Of course, they won in the COVID year when there was, what, 20,000 people there? So I don't really count it. Then you got Jake Browning and the Bengals and a Charger team that'll have nothing to play with. And maybe at that point, Brandon Staley won't be there. Like, you win against the Packers at Lambeau Field on Sunday Night Football in resounding fashion and comfortable fashion, I think everybody starts putting their bets down on Kansas City to host the AFC title game once again. Like, how could you not? Do you really trust Baltimore? Do you really trust Miami, Jacksonville? And if they beat Buffalo the following week, that kind of cements it for me. Because that means that Buffalo ain't going to be in the postseason. Cincinnati's not going to be in the postseason. If they do make it somehow, miraculously, it ain't going to be with Joe Burrow. Like, this one is just a, I want to say like a building block for this season, but it's not really. It's just one of those games where it's a statement game in your own way. Like, this is just a statement game for Kansas City and not for the rest of the NFL. Like, this is one of those games you can just prove to yourself, hey, we still are that team. That's back-to-back games now, comfortable wins. We should have beaten Philly. We should be 10-2 right now. And everybody's complaining about the receiving core and, oh, this team's done, this team's cooked. Dynasty's over. This is a big one. This is a very big one, not just because it's prime time, but it's because a team, it's against a team that is rolling with some momentum right now. They have suddenly caught fire. and they beat one of the best teams in the NFC on their own turf. Speaking of Detroit, this is when you can silence all of that. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people betting +6 in favor of Green Bay just because of where it's being played, the way Green Bay looked on Thanksgiving. Patrick Mahomes is going to have his hands full with that pass rush of Green Bay. Secondary a little bit. It's a damn good secondary. We know this receiving core has struggled to find ways to get open. But a fun test should be a fun game. And, man, what are we going to be talking about on Monday if Kansas City routes Green Bay? I'm not going to go as far to say that, but I could take Kansas City 30-20 in this game. Defense can adjust late in the game. Offense keeps it rolling. Maybe it's the revenge game for MVS. God, is that even possible? Is that even possible for MVS to have more than 3 catches in this game? Might ask Marco that a little bit later on in the show. But, Marco, I do want to get your thoughts here. Lambeau Field, Sunday Night Football, Kansas City a 6-point favorite. How do you see this thing going down at 7:20 on NBC?
First of all, I think yes with Marquez because he's got a good name, first of all, and people with names like that, they like to prove the haters and doubters wrong.
All
so
right.
This game right here, I see it as a game where the defense, it's going to have to be the Chiefs defense stepping up a little bit more than the offense because the Packers, you talked about Christian Watson, they also have a really good rookie receiver in Jaden Reed as well. And Jordan Love playing really well right now at this point in the season. It seems that getting through each week, he's getting there. And you see that growth from him. But really it is going to be at the defense, I think, that has to do something a little extra. And that's just been the narrative all season. And that's part of the reason why I'm saying that is because that's what it's been like all year long for the Chiefs when they get the wins. Now, last week it wasn't, but going up against a quarterback like Aiden O'Connell, who we talked about already, and then Chiefs waking up finally offensively, I'm just curious to see how they follow that up. And you talked about it. Carrying that second half over into the first half from the last game to this Sunday. I see it to where the Chiefs, again, I think that may come out as they usually do in the first half, where they do push the Packers up against the ropes, but the Green Bay defense makes some adjustments at halftime, maybe slows them down a little bit, weather being a factor also, being on the road. I think the defense struggles at first as they find a way to kind of get the Packers are going to come out the same, kind of finding a tempo, wanting to find that tempo that the Raiders had in this last game, and they had the receivers to do it. And so I think it's going to be a real big game for the secondary, Snead and McDuffie, especially with what they'll have to deal with in these two young receivers. So that's why I don't see the Packers slowing down from what they have had momentum wise with those two young guys. And man, I'm telling you right now, Jaden Reed, I picked him up on my fantasy team because just of what he's been on that offense, a real big spark. And because he can do a lot of things, and so I see it the way last week the Raiders were able to start with Jakobi Meyers. I could see that happening, but I just think again the Chiefs are the better football team. They've been really good at forcing turnovers and getting to the quarterback. So the pass rush is gonna have to be there, but Jordan Love isn't a perfect, accurate, gonna place the ball in the right spots the whole time. With every throw. So I think there's going to be some mistakes made, and I think that the Chiefs, it's cover in this one. I'll say it's going to be about it, and I've been influenced by guests on the morning show all week by it, and I think they're all correct when they go low scoring, getting close to the total, which I believe, 42.5 is what, 43.5? I think Chiefs win this one 27-17, 21-ish. So a push or a cover there, I guess you could say, from my standpoint.
And I'm glad you said that because I said 30-20, you said 27-17,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Here are the numbers when a team scores more than 25 points on Green Bay. They lost to Atlanta in week two, 25-24, so we'll count it 25+. So they're 0-1 there. When Detroit scored 34 at Lambeau, they lost. They also lost to Denver and Minnesota, but only Denver and Minnesota scored 19 and 24, and they lost to Pittsburgh, and they only scored 23. So you look at the numbers, there's 25 and up. It hasn't happened a lot this year. Haven't had a win. When they have beaten teams this year, it has basically taken a different type of bad offensively from the other team. When they beat Chicago in week one, only 20 from the Bears. New Orleans, with two quarterbacks in that game, had 17. When they beat the Rams, Matt Stafford didn't play. They had 3 points. When they played the Chargers and Justin Herbert, they only had 20 points. And then against Detroit, there was a defensive touchdown in that game, only 22 points, the Detroit Lions. So if Kansas City can play clean football here, I think that's a big thing. Like, you look at the Denver game when they lost 24-9, 5 turnovers in that game. Against Philadelphia, drops, and just not giving Patrick Holmes the best protection. Like, of course, all these things are fundamentals 101. You take care of the football, you have a clean pocket, you probably win this game. But it's even more so against the Packers. Like, the Packers are not going to beat you head-to-head straight up, both teams playing clean football. If that is the case, the Chiefs will win by 7 to 10 points. If Kansas City plays with their food, they turn it over 3 times, and the Packers are taking care of the ball, they have the ball for the majority of the game, you know, 30 minutes of time possession, the Chiefs aren't going to win this football game. It's on the road, primetime football. I wouldn't favor Kansas City in that spot, especially with their level of inconsistency. But Green Bay is just one of those opponents. Like, you don't give them extra possessions. You take care of the football. You're going to be fine in this game. And that usually is the case against a lot of opponents on the Chiefs' schedule. But Green Bay, to me, they just don't scare me. Like, I'm honestly not even that worried after the game against Detroit last week. Like, Detroit played with their food. They overlooked Green Bay. Thought they could take care of business at Ford Field. Couldn't get it done. And when they played sloppy, and even though they had north of 430 yards of total offense, sloppy play. Defensive touchdown for Green Bay. 20 points in the first quarter for Green Bay. Don't see that happening again against this Kansas City defense. Again, kickoff at 7:20 on NBC Sunday Night Football. Chiefs and Packers at Lambeau Field. The Chiefs, a 6-point favorite, the total at 42.5. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will wrap up the show with some KU UConn talk and send Marco off on his final show at the station. That's next on ESPN Kansas City. Well, here we go. It's the final 5 minutes of Marco's time as producer. That's the word I've been looking for here. Board operator isn't enough. Isn't enough for Marco. Last day on the show. Last show he's producing. Final 5 minutes here.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is I do remember the very first segment we did on this show, and I'm now going to remember the last segment we did. 2 years ago, the first show we ever did, Marco and I, we led off with, could Mecole Hardman be the receiver that the Chiefs need him to be? All the way back. That was the first segment we had.
Still yes.
Yeah, he's still here. He's on the IR. But it turned out we had our answer 2 years later. He went to a different team, and still the same result. But that was our first ever segment. Our first ever segment was, would Mecole Hardman be the Chiefs receiver that they needed him to be? No. And I would love to pull up that audio sometime, and we can laugh about it, because I'm sure I was being a little bit more optimistic. You know, well, you know, all he needs to be is a number three or a number four. Well, it didn't end up being that. He did not end up being that, and gosh, that would have been back in either August, September of 2021, right before the season, and the year the Chiefs lost to the Bengals in the AFC title game, and Mecole Hardman did not do much that year. Actually, he did a little bit later on in the season, but again, who really cares at that point? Who really cares about that segment? Because the final segment we'll do is for a massive game tonight in Lawrence. Kansas and UConn, a battle of defending champions. Kansas won in 2022, and UConn won last year, and might have had the most impressive run to a title that I've ever seen. I mean, truly. I want to say the only game that it was even close to being within single digits was the title game. Other than that, UConn never struggled against San Diego State. What a weird matchup that was. But UConn, as a 4 seed, treated everybody like a JV team. And they returned a lot of talent. It is a loaded team. It is a team that is going to have a damn good chance of being in the Final Four this upcoming year. Yet tonight in Lawrence at Allen Fieldhouse, I'll be there. The Jayhawks are a 2.5-point favorite. Number 4 in the country, UConn, against number 5, Kansas, at 6-1, their lone loss to Shaka Smart's Marquette Golden Eagles. But Hunter Dickinson in Kansas, DeJuan Harris, Kevin McCollar Jr., they are favored tonight in what is sure to be maybe the most electric atmosphere that we see in Lawrence all year long. Though I say that, and the Missouri Tigers will be there next weekend on Saturday. So I could be way off base in that, but I'd imagine tonight is going to be a decibel record breaking, type of night for Kansas and UConn. I really am torn with who to go with here. Like, I think the home court advantage, you know, plays into it a little bit. The way Kansas plays at home, the way they play against really good opponents. And here's a fun stat. Bill Self, when his team is the lower-ranked team, which is tonight, Kansas is 5, UConn is 4, 12-0. Kansas has never lost under Bill Self when they are playing a team that is ranked higher than them at Allen Fieldhouse. So odds would tell you they can continue that streak. But also you could take the approach of, well, somebody's got to win, and why the hell wouldn't it be UConn? I mean, UConn hasn't had any struggles this year. The way they beat Indiana by 20 and Texas by 10 in their non-con tournament, really impressive. Really, really, really impressive. And this is a big UConn team. I mean, a really big group. I think Kansas in every single game has had the upper hand in terms of their size. They're not going to have that tonight. Donovan Klingon, you got a 7-footer there. You got multiple big dudes in the front court. Cam Spencer's going to be tough to guard in the backcourt for DeJuan Harris and Kevin McCollar Jr. Tristan Newton, another guy that has just been unbelievably talented. The one guy that I don't believe is going to play who's going to be a lottery pick, Stephon Castle. He is somebody I don't think is going to be active for UConn tonight. But overall, man, this is going to be a hands-full type of team. Alex Caravan, geez, UConn, I'd imagine, will stay in the top 10 all year long. But what a fun matchup tonight. 8 p.m. tip-off in Lawrence between Kansas and UConn. ESPN2, or listen to it over on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Marco, it has been a pleasure. Last words from you as we sign off for the final time with you as the producer.
Dude, right back at you. Who would have thought that two guys in a KU newsroom back on the hill at Stauffer Flint would be doing a show together here in Kansas City on 1510. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, man. You were a stranger. Now I can call you a friend, former coworker. But let me tell you, you're a talented guy at this. It's been a pleasure being here, sitting in this chair, getting to listen to you hours on end for the last couple of years. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. All right.
And same to you, man. I can call you a friend, and you are a very talented person in whatever you do and whatever you're going to do after this. Well, there's Ray Charles. It's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, for the final time alongside Marco Marquez. You enjoy the weekend. We will talk to you on Monday, Kansas City.